unclean, unclean. That's what they'd have to shout if they neared a crowd of people. You see, but they seldom came near a crowd of people. Because when they were given the diagnosis, they were herded into these colonies of like-infected people. The diagnosis? Leprosy. And upon hearing that news, hearing that diagnosis, they were immediately lost everything. They immediately lost their home. They lost their wife. They lost their husband. They lost their kids. They lost their job. They lost their position. They lost their name. They lost their hands. They lost their face. Eventually, they lost their life. You see, leprosy is this disease, this skin disease that is transferable and deadly. And when they had it, they became isolated. Isolated socially, isolated physically, isolated spiritually. They were just seen as the worthless wounded. That's how they looked at themselves. That's how the world looked at them. But not Jesus. Jesus looked much deeper within. He looked much deeper in their hearts. Today, what I want us to do is to really just see through the eyes of Jesus as we go through this story here in Luke chapter 17. So if you have your Bibles, turn there now. It's the third book in the New Testament, a book written by a doctor, which is appropriate for today as we talk about these men who had leprosy. Follow along with me. Starts in verse number 11. Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance. You see, they knew their social and religious boundaries. He goes on to say, they called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. When he saw them, he said, go, show yourselves to the priest. And they went, and they were cleansed. Here's the lesson, church. When Jesus Christ shows up in a life, the wounded get healed. The wounded get healed. And I think there are a couple lessons we can learn from this brief passage here. There are two parts, I believe, to the healing process that we all need to look at. And the first part is simply this. We need to put ourselves in the path of Jesus. If we want to be healed, we need to put ourselves in the path of Jesus. Our text here today says they went out and met him. They went out and found him. They strategically placed themselves in the path of Jesus Christ because they wanted to be healed. Now, I don't know about you, but this had to have been difficult for these guys. I mean, remember, these are guys who are isolated to a colony of people who were infected just like they were. And it had to be painful for them to go on such a journey like this and to walk. And then the public scorn. To be out of their colony, people had to be making fun of them and saying things to them, harsh things to them. But they were trying to get to Jesus. They just wanted to put themselves in his path. It had to be difficult. And I think about that old Billy Joe song. I mean, they're just sharing a drink called loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone, right? Because I think about the community that these guys had to have on this journey together, because the one thing that linked all these guys together was their disease. Their disease. But they found community in like-infected people. And I think about us. I think about us right here at Christ Church, because guess what? Guess what links all of us in this room here together? It's a terminal disease called sin. We are all a bunch of failures. We've all messed up. We've all failed. We have all dropped the ball. And the great thing about this place is that it is a place where we can come together, no longer be isolated, and say, I can find healing here in this place. Friends, Christ Church, we're just a bunch of moral foul-ups. Just trying to do this thing together. I mean, we're just trying to place ourselves in the path of Jesus. And I hope you know, if you're wounded, that this is a place where you can come and find healing. We are a trauma center for wounded people. And I hope you know when you come in here that no one ever looks down on you because of where you are, where you've been in life. But we want you to find healing because just like you, we are just simply trying to put ourselves in the path of Jesus. Now, trust me, this isn't a coincidence that these guys met Jesus on this road. I mean, they weren't just in some random town, happened to be standing there at the right time of day, and Jesus passes by. All right? These guys strategically placed themselves in the path of Jesus because they wanted to be healed. Have you ever had that attitude, asking yourself the question, when is Jesus going to show up in my life? You ever said that before? I mean, where is he at? I mean, I got all this stuff going on. Where is Jesus? When is he going to show up in my life? Guess what? He already has. He's already there. Listen to what Jesus says. He says this incredible verse, and you've probably heard it before. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. He says, come to me. Put yourself in my path. Richard Foster writes this, today the heart of God is an open wound of love. He aches over our distance and preoccupation. He mourns that we do not draw near to him. He grieves that we have forgotten him. He weeps over our obsession with muchness and manyness. He longs for our presence. You hear that? He longs for our presence. I mean, I think God's great disappointment in us is when we don't come to him. When we don't bring our hurt. We don't bring our pain. We don't bring our wounded to him. I mean, he longs for us to cry out just like these guys did. Cry out for help. And he's saying, I will help you. I'll be there. I think there's this great recovery principle there in verse number 13. Listen, it's a short little verse. It simply says, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. Jesus, Master, have pity on us. I think in that are four confessions. Four confessions that we all have to make in order for us to get healing in our life. And the first one is simply this. He's saying, I am powerless. That's what these 10 guys were saying. I am powerless. They said, Jesus, Yeshua, which means Savior. I need saved. I can't do this on my own. They know that they have a problem that they cannot fix, but Jesus, he can. They acknowledge that they are powerless. Listen to what Nicholas Harmon writes. He writes, brokenness is what needs to be embraced in order to restore the human condition to a healed state. Brendan Manning says this, the spiritual life begins with the acceptance of our wounded self. Church, many of us in this room know that real true healing begins when we acknowledge that we got some hurts, we have some habits, we have some hangups that we cannot control or heal on our own. We can't do it. And so we come to God and we say, I am powerless. And then secondly, I think we see here, we simply need to say, you are powerful. You are powerful. You see what else he says here in this text? Not only do they call him Jesus, Yeshua, Savior, they say, Master. Master. What they're saying is, this disease has mastered us. We can't beat this. We can't fix this, but you can. You have the power to do this. I mean, they had heard of Jesus' reputation. They had seen him heal the blind. I mean, they'd seen him straighten the legs of the cripple. They'd watched him cast out demons. They'd seen him that he'd raised the dead. They had heard of his reputation. They knew that hundreds of people had been freed by the compassion and the power of the living God. And they knew that if they can just get in front of Jesus and call on his compassion, that he had the power to do something about it. Have you heard about Jesus' reputation? Have you heard about his power? I mean, do you know what he has done in the lives of people just down the pew from you in here? I mean, I think right now the guy that Jesus brought out of years and years of a gambling addiction here in this room. I mean, I think about the woman he helped heal from the past memories of being molested as a child. I mean, I think of the guy who was healed when the doctor said, there is no way that this disease will go away. I think of the couple on the brink of divorce who Jesus brought them back together. I mean, I think of the woman who has been sober for 11 years because he gave the power to conquer that. I think of the one he brought out of depression. I think of the couple who lost a child and Jesus showed up. And he's there with them in that valley and walked with them through that valley. And he brought healing, restoration to their life. Do you know his power? Have you experienced his compassion? It is there for you. And he just wants to give it to you. He just wants to give it to you. It is powerful. That is who Jesus is. And I think it's so important for us to know that. And sometimes I think it's easy for us to just offer up prayers to God. In fact, one author I read this week said simply this, that you know what? Our prayers to God often say, you know what? God, get me out of this. I mean, our prayers to God say, get me out of this. But he said, you know, people in underdeveloped parts of the world, sometimes their prayers, most times their prayers are, God, get me through this. God, get me through this. You see, I think God is much more interested in us getting to know our deliverer than being delivered. And whether he gets you out of it or gets you through it, he wants to help. He is there. And so like these 10 guys, we say, I am powerless. You are powerful. And then thirdly, I am entirely ready for you to change me. I mean, I am ready for you to change me. And these lepers right here, they demonstrate that fact by simply doing what Jesus says without any proof that they were going to be healed. I mean, Jesus said, go. Go show yourself to the priest. There was no proof that they were going to be healed. And so they turned, they walked away. Now, I don't know about you, but can you picture this moment? I like to put myself in these moments, in these Bible stories, and try to get the feeling of what it was going to be like. I mean, just imagine being one of the disciples in this story, all right? Here you guys are, you're walking with Jesus, you're walking towards Jerusalem, you got some business to do in Jerusalem, and here come these guys, and I know there's no such thing as zombies, all right? But you got these 10 lepers, and they're coming towards you, and they got joint problems, they're walking, and I'm sure they're mumbling, and they're coming towards, the disciples are going, whoa, get away, you know, and Jesus just stays right there. And these guys come up to Jesus, these 10 lepers, and say, would you heal us, would you cleanse us? And Jesus says, all right, go, show yourself to the priest. Which is what they were supposed to do. If they ever wanted to re-enter into society, they had to show themselves to the priest that they were clean. So these guys, upon Jesus saying these words, turn around and start walking back this way. And I think at that moment, Jesus turns around to his disciples and says, watch this, guys. This is going to be awesome. You ready? Wait. We're going to let them go a little further away. And these guys are walking away, you know. They're going to show themselves to the priest. And Jesus is over here. He goes, all right, you ready? Bam! And these guys are over here walking, oh, yeah, you know, and they're giving each other high fives and they run to the priest. See, I think what Jesus is saying here is this. Now, are you ready to do whatever it is I tell you to do? I mean, are you willing, if you want to change, are you willing to do something that doesn't make sense at the moment because you want to change? You know, I think sometimes God wants us to do these little journeys into our hearts. And ask ourselves those kind of tough questions, those questions about who we really are on the inside. You know, those questions that, you know, really probe to our character and say, do you really want to change? I think he wants us to ask questions like, why do I let my temper get to me? I mean, why do I drink so much? I mean, why am I so concerned with what other people think about me? I mean, why do I have to control every situation and every person around me? I mean, what about my character makes me exaggerate things? You know, why am I so concerned about point spreads when my family is just growing up and passing me by? I mean, why has pornography got me so addicted? What is it about my character that I need to change? What is it about my character that I need to change to find healing in my life? Let me ask you a question. Why is it so difficult for us to change? I mean, why do we find it so difficult? I mean, I think a lot of times we kind of fall in two camps of that question, don't we? I think a lot of people kind of put all their eggs in the DNA basket. You know, we say, you know what? I can't help it. It's just the way I am. Mom, dad, 46,000 chromosomes. You know, I would change. I'd be different, but that's just the way I'm made. Can't help it. And, you know, I understand that. But what it's saying is you have no choice. That you really have no choice in your life and your behavior when you do. Another camp would be, you know what? It's just the environment I grew up in. And I completely understand that. You know, it's just the way I grew up in my house. It's an environment I grew up in. It's just the way we are, just the way we're going to be. And those are two good, legitimate reasons, DNA and your environment. But why do we find it so difficult to change? See, I think the reason is simply this. We don't want to. We don't want to change. And sometimes, and call me crazy, maybe you thought this thought before as well, but sometimes in this weird way, we find that thing in our life that is destructive, the thing in our life that's tearing us apart, the thing that is making us sick, and in a weird paradoxical way, we kind of like it. We kind of get used to it. It kind of gets like a comfortable pair of shoes. We say, you know what? I don't want to trade it in. I've kind of gotten used to it. I've kind of worked around it. It's comfortable. You know, the change, it's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be a lot of pain. I don't know if I necessarily want to do that. The leper colony, I've gotten used to it. It's okay. And we just don't want to change. And it's crazy. It's crazy when we've been offered freedom. We've been offered health, but yet we stay in this sick state. And Jesus says, it doesn't have to be that way. If you just cooperate with me, I can bring healing to your life. So these guys say, I am powerless, you are powerful. I'm ready for change. And then this fourth thing is simply this. You in your mercy can do this in my life. God, you can do it. God, what I'm struggling with, what I'm dealing with, you can do it. You can pull this off. I mean, I trust your mercy. I trust your grace. I know you're looking out for my best interests. I know my plans may not be your plans. I know you may not answer my prayers the way I hope you would. I know you may not heal me the way I think you would, but God, I know you love me. I know you're looking out for my best interests, so I trust you. And I just want to thank you in advance for the healing you are going to do in my life. You see, I think that's the first part of the story, and that's the first part of the healing process. I am powerless. You are powerful. I am ready to change, and you and your mercy can do this. But I think there's the rest of the story here. Now, I think there's a second part of the story, because I know there's a second part of the healing process, and this is part two, and this is, I think, the part of the story that is really important. This is the part of the story that Luke says, you know what, this is what you really want to get. And so he says, if you want to be completely healed, then you need to live with a grateful heart. You need to live with a grateful heart. Look what it says. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. I can't tell you, church, how much worship and gratitude plays a part of the healing process in your life. I mean, did you catch the phrase in here that was used twice? A loud voice. Look what it says. It says, they stood at a distance and cried out in a loud voice. And then it says, the one who returned came back praising God in a loud voice. You see, I think the lesson here is simply this. Our response to God's mercy ought to be as passionate as our request for God's mercy. Our response to God's mercy ought to be as passionate as our request. After all God has done for us, shouldn't we respond to him with this extreme gratitude? You see, I think that's the second part of the healing process. And it's so important to have a grateful heart. And when that healing begins to come into your life, then you go to God every day and say, God, thank you for what you're doing in my life. Thank you what you did today. Thank you for healing me today. I cannot wait for tomorrow. But isn't there different levels of gratitude? I mean, let me ask you, I mean, why are some people more grateful than others? I mean, have you ever thought about that? Why are some people more grateful than others? Because there are different levels of gratitude, right? I mean, maybe here in an hour or two, you're going to leave this place. You're going to jump in your car. You're going to be talking about where we're going to go have lunch. And you're kind of trying to get out of here, and your traffic's kind of backed up. And someone waves you in. And you're like, thanks, I appreciate that. Now, you're thankful. You're grateful. Might not be ready to give that person a kidney, all right? But, you know, you're grateful for what they've done. Or maybe, you know, you let a friend borrow your truck. And they bring it back, and you notice that they had washed it. And you get inside, they've cleaned it out, and they fill it full of gas. You're like, wow, he didn't have to do that. Well, on the inside, you're thinking, it's about time they've done that. You know, I've loaned it to them for years, and now they finally fill it with gas. I really appreciate that. Or maybe you and your brother had a horrible relationship. Maybe you just got one of those relationships that are just walls have been put up between the two of you. I mean, he's the type of guy that even as a kid, everything he touched just turned into gold, and everything he touched just kind of fell apart. And the older you got, the more that became apparent, the more that the wall was built between the two, and he just became more successful, and you just continued to struggle to find a job and keep a job and pay your bills. And the divide between you two grew, and he'd call, you wouldn't return the phone calls, and he'd send letters, and you would never write back. But you get to a point in life where things really weren't going well for you. In fact, you're going to have to file bankruptcy. You're about to lose everything, lose your house, your car, lose absolutely everything. And one day you walk out to your mailbox. And you open the mailbox, you look inside that mailbox, and you see it's a letter from the bank. And you're like, oh, it's the last thing I wanted to see today. Because I know the two words are going to be in there, insufficient funds. And so you go in there and you tear open that envelope and you look at your bank statement as you're walking back towards the house. You stop in your tracks. And you look there and it says there's been a $15,000 deposit. And you're going, there's no way. This can't be right. And so you go in the house, you dial up the phone, you dial up your bank, and you say, hey, what's going on here? And you find out your brother made a $15,000 deposit so you wouldn't have to file bankruptcy. And now all that anger, all that resentment, all that pain in the past, when your heart just melts away. And you get in your car and you drive over to his house and you knock on the door and he swings it open and you just have tears just pouring down your face. And you go, thank you. Thank you so much. You didn't have to do that. I didn't deserve it. I didn't deserve it. You see, I think that's the heart that these lepers brought to Jesus. I think when this leper came back and said, I'm so thankful. I mean, there were years of political and social fighting going on between the Samaritans and the Jews. And he put all that stuff aside and he came back and said, all I know is I am healed. I am free. I am well. I've got my life back. I get my family back, my job back. Thank you. Thank you. I didn't deserve it. I didn't deserve it. You know, I think there's a reason that sometimes we're not very grateful. And I believe that sometimes we believe that we deserve everything we've got. That we just deserve everything we have. I know I've done this before. I've looked at my life and said, you know what? I've done that on my own. I mean, I sat back and thought about, you know, I deserve everything I have because I've worked hard. I've earned this. I deserve everything I have. And if you say those words and you say, you know what? I've done this on my own. Then you're in a dangerous place not to have gratitude in your life. And you really are. Someone once said this, a proud man is seldom a grateful man, for he never thinks he gets as much as he deserves. Jesus records another story in the book of Luke, in chapter 7, when Jesus goes and has lunch with this religious ruler who's gotten a whole lot in life, and he thinks he's earned everything he's got by his good deeds and his religious rule-keeping. And so there he is with Jesus. They're having this lunch and having this deep discussion. And in bursts this woman. And she comes running into Jesus. And she is just bawling. She is just crying. Because a couple minutes before, Jesus had forgiven her sins. And she comes over to Jesus and she kneels down at his feet. And she begins to wash his feet with her tears. And then she takes a jar of perfume and pours it on him. And this religious ruler, this church-going guy, just goes nuts. He's like, what is she doing? Not only did she interrupt my party, but do you know who she is? Do you know what she is? She's a prostitute. How can you even let her touch her? Why are you? And he just is incredulous. And then Jesus says these words. He says, I tell you, her sins, and they are many, have been forgiven. So she has shown me much love. But a person who is forgiven little shows only little love. You see, what he's saying is, if you think you deserve everything that comes your way, if you think you deserve God's grace, then you are not going to be grateful for his grace. If you say, you know what, it's about time I get a couple breaks in life, it's about time the ball rolls my way, then you are not going to have a grateful heart. You need to have a grateful heart. I think another reason sometimes we don't have a grateful heart is we just experience an abundance of affluence. We just have a lot of stuff. And I'm not saying if you have a lot of stuff that you're not grateful. I'm not saying that at all. In fact, some of the most grateful, joyful, generous people I know are people with a lot of means. But you know it's true, don't you? When you get stuff, when you begin to raise the bar and set the expectations a little higher, sometimes you begin to forget how much you appreciate the little things. You forget to appreciate the little things in life. I mean, if you grew up eating at Ruth Chris all your life, then you're probably not going to appreciate when someone hands you a gift card to the Waffle House. Probably not going to do it. That's just the way it is, all right? Or maybe when you turn 16, your mom and dad hand you the keys to a brand new BMW, but now you're married, you got a couple kids, and you're driving around in a used Dodge minivan, all right? You're probably not going to be really appreciative. You know, maybe sometimes in your life you grew up in a way that you were always given anything you wanted. Maybe it was your mom or dad, or maybe your grandparents who gave you that, and you thought that's just the way life is. You get whatever you want. And so when your little world is rocked, and your little perfect world you thought you had is rocked, then you begin to get negative. You begin to forget to appreciate the little things. And another thing we need to do to have a grateful heart is we need to quit being around negative people. I mean, quit being around negative people. If you hang around negative people, you're going to be negative. If you hang around someone with a poor attitude, someone who's always complaining and whining, someone who's always grumpy, someone whose cup has never been full in his life, then you're going to become that way. You're going to become a negative. Hang around positive people. They'll make your attitude positive. Heard a story about a guy who bought a new hunting dog. He was so excited about this dog. Paid a lot of money for this dog because this dog had the ability to walk on water. And he couldn't wait to go out and show his friends his new hunting dogs. They went hunting out, duck hunting. They're in the blind, and boom, 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 hit a couple ducks. They hit the water. He says, go get them. And this dog, ooh, and sure enough, he is walking on water. Runs out there and grabs a duck and comes back. And this guy who bought this dog is so proud, he looks over to his friend and says, hey, what do you think about that? My dog can walk on water. He says, yep, but I bet he can't swim. Think about it, all right? I mean, don't you hate people like that that just always find the negative in everything? Don't hang around negative people. They're going to bring your attitude down. Well, let's get some application here. I know you're thinking, what? Does this have to do with anything? Dogs? All right, here's some application. If you want to continue the process of healing, if you want to continue to be a grateful person, then first of all, you have to acknowledge that God has given you everything you have. Everything you own is God's. I mean, everything you have is God's. That's what this guy did, this leper who came back. He came back and said, you know what? This was God who did it. It was the only way this could happen. It was all his hand. Listen to what it says in James 1:17. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of heavenly lights, who does not change like the shifting shadows. He is just a consistent, all-giving God. He's not a God who comes around every once in a while and just kind of sprinkles some treats at your feet and says, that'll hold you off for a little while. It says, everything good has come from God. And everything good in our life that we have has come from God. And when we say things like, that's the stuff I own, that's my stuff, it's not. It's just given to us by God so we can learn some stewardship principles in life. In fact, I remember the lesson I learned on this is I was out at Kentucky Lake, Barkley Lake, up in the Midwest, and we're out there with a friend of mine, Eric, and we were out skiing in his dad's boat. He had a nice boat, and we're out there having a good time, and here comes this beautiful, huge, white yacht type of boat. You know what I'm talking about? The one you just kind of drool as you watch go by. I mean, this thing was just gorgeous, the people on the boat, and hey, woo, you know, music was going, and we're going, look at those people. And I started thinking, you know what? I wonder what the name of that boat is, you know? You know, show me the money, living a good life, you know, whatever it may be. Well, the boat cruised by, and we looked at the name on the back of the boat. It said, on loan from God. I thought, yep, they get it. And you see, church, when you get that and you understand that, it changes your attitude, and it makes you so much more of a grateful person. I think another thing we can do is simply this. Second, if you want to become a grateful person, then you got to throw yourself into helping those who have less than you have. I mean, throw yourself into helping those who have less than you have. I mean, there is nothing that can expand your heart more than helping somebody else. Nothing. Listen to a couple of these verses in rapid fire. Proverbs 14:31. He who oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, but whoever is kind and needy honors God. Proverbs 19:17. If you help the poor, you are lending to the Lord, and he pays a wonderful interest on your loan. Proverbs also says a generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. Listen to this exchange I found this week between a college girl who was in a car accident, and she was talking to her campus pastor, and when she received over 200 cards just to let her know that people are thinking about it. Listen to what she writes. My condition isn't so bad. I can move my arms slightly. I can shrug my shoulders. I can turn my neck and raise my wrist. I guess that doesn't sound like much, but in all honesty, I like it this way. My whole personality changed with my accident, and I became a better person. I used to lie in bed and say, please, God, please, let me walk. And over and over and over, I said, please, God. And then someone or something changed my mind, and I found myself saying, please, God, use me. God, use me. Use me to help others. It was so strange how it happened. I truly think it was a miracle. Many things like that have happened to me, and they still do. It's an education in itself. Sometimes I think people miss out on a lot in life by simply not taking the time to realize that the whole concept of living is giving to others no matter how much one has to give. I just want to tell you, if you want to expand your heart, then jump in and serve somebody else. I mean, we love making a difference in our community around here. And there's nothing that would do make my heart just leap more than us making a huge difference in this community. But we have so many things that we have around here to make a difference in. But the reason we do it is not just to help the community, but it's to help you. It's to help you have that experience where your heart can just be expanded with gratitude. And so I want to encourage you to get involved in some of our local mission stuff, things that we do in this community. There's stuff going on all over the place. mean, we have so many local partners, so many things that are happening, church members leading the cause in so many different areas. And if you are interested in serving, you're interested in getting involved, when you go to online to our missions, you go to the serve counter, talk to Mark and his team. I mean, there's so many things going on where you can make a difference in this community, but you can make a difference in your heart and cause your heart to expand. I mean, a couple months ago, I don't know if you remember the whole taking it to the streets thing, but when we did that, we had a police officer who attends church here says, you know what, if you really want to make a difference in taking it to the streets, there's this apartment complex that you guys ought to go check out. And so he said, you need to go check out this place called The Woods. And so we did. We went and checked it out, and we decided, yeah, we're going to do a kind of one-day carnival there. And we showed up with bounce houses and balloons and face painting. We had a good old time. And a few of the residents came out and checked out what we were doing. We served hot dogs and hamburgers and all kinds of good stuff. And it was a one-day thing. But when we all left, we felt God was saying, there's more here that needs to be done. And so we began praying about what was going to happen, what we can do. And God opened the door. And 2 weeks ago, we did a vacation Bible school there for 5 nights. And it was amazing as throughout that week, we just continued to build relationship after relationship as we asked these people, what can we do for you? How can we serve you? And we began to make acquaintances and friends, and people began to ask questions, spiritual questions about God, about their walk, about Jesus, about church. And all these needs just began to pour out of there. In fact, after that weekend, in the last 2 weeks we have done it, we have brought almost 24 people here in a bus because they didn't have a way to get to church. And so now they're coming here on the weekends just because we simply said, where is the need? How can we meet it? And it's amazing what happens. And my heart just is overflowing. You'll hear a story today of one of the kids that's in that apartment complex and how God has just changed her life because people looked around, people in this church looked around and said, is there a need? How can we meet it? So I encourage you to use your gifts. Get out of the pews. Get into the game. Start to make a difference. And if you really want a life-changing experience, go on a short-term mission trip with us. I mean, we had a team that just got back from Honduras last week. We got 2 trips to Haiti coming up for singles and teens. We got one to Dominican Republic coming up. In fact, there's a meeting next hour about it. I think it's October 8th, 10th, somewhere around there. Thanks, Mark. It's a great opportunity for you to go for a couple days, and I promise you, your life will be forever changed if you go on one of these trips. I know sometimes you go, I don't know if I can go overseas. It's 5 days. I mean, it's $500, $600, $700, $800. But I promise you, it is worth every penny and every hour. Because you'll find out what most of us who have all gone on these trips have found out. Man, we think we're going to serve them. And we come back all going, man, they served us. It's a life-changing experience. Get in the game. Serve other people. You want your heart to expand with gratitude? Serve someone. Serve someone. I think another thing that we need to do is this. Number three, stop complaining. Stop complaining. Let me give you 4 words that'll change your attitude. These 4 words are powerful words, and say these with me. It could be worse. All right, say that with me. It could be worse. Now say it like you mean it, all right? It could be worse. When you're having one of those stinking thinking kind of days, when things aren't going your way, when you go, oh, my attitude is about to go south, just say those words. It could be worse. I mean, one of my favorite characters in the Bible is the Apostle Paul. I mean, this guy just understood this whole attitude thing. I mean, he just got it. And he's writing the church in Philippi, and he's going, guess what? You're never going to believe it, how good I got it. I'm in jail. I'm in prison. I'm in captivity. And so, see, Paul's attitude was, I'm not the one in jail. They're the one with me. In fact, he's thinking, you know what? This guy, this guard, thinks that I'm chained to him. He's actually chained to me. Now, can you imagine being chained to the greatest missionary in history 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? I mean, it'd be like constant. You know, it's like, hey, did you hear about Jesus? You know this about Jesus? You know, Jesus did this. Jesus said this. Jesus went here. Jesus went there. You know, this is what God says. This is what you need to do. And I'm sure this guard, after a while, was like, all right, I give in. Sure, I'll become a Christian, you know? And as soon as he went to sleep, he's like, but another thing and another thing. And I mean, all day long, Paul just had this incredible attitude where he got this, oh, it could be worse thing. And he gave us these incredible words, this incredible attitude check here in Philippians 4, and says this, for I have learned how to get along happily, whether I have much or little. I know how to live in almost nothing or with everything. I've learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it be a full stomach or hunger, plenty or want. For I can do everything God asks of me with the help of Christ, who gives me the strength and the power. The lesson simply is, quit complaining. It could be worse. Let gratitude expand your heart. And lastly is this, express your thanks to God freely and frequently. Express your thanks to God freely and frequently. You see, when you have that type of attitude, it changes your heart. It changes your personality. I mean, let me just be real honest with you. There are some Sunday mornings I wake up and go, you know what? I wish I could call in sick today. You know, wouldn't it be great to get a Jags game on time? Or, you know, wouldn't it be great to just kick back and watch the morning talk shows and read the paper? And oh, I'm just not feeling well. I don't have one of those jobs, right? Calling sick on a Sunday morning. And so there are times I know I've come in here before with a bad attitude. And I walk down front and I sit right there and then worship starts. And I start to sing. I start to hear the words. And by the time it's done, I'm like, oh, God, thank you. Thank you so much for what you do in my life. Thank you so much for the chance I can come and worship you and praise you and adore you. And when you do that, it just changes your heart. It just raises the level of gratitude in your life. I mean, give a couple of ways that you can do this. I mean, if you take some time in your day to just sit down and write a couple things down. I know some of you may journal really well. I'm not a great journaler, all right? It takes me like 2 years to fill a book. I mean, my wife can fill it in 2 weeks, but me, I'm like 2 years, all right? But I can sit there and I will take my time to sit down and write what God has done. In fact, I have a book that says, What is God Doing in My Life? It's on the title on the outside of it. Where I just write down the things that I see God doing, every big things and little things. It just helps me to remember that. Spend a couple of minutes every day reading your Bible. I mean, just start with 7 minutes. 7 minutes. I mean, you have 1,440 minutes in a day. Give him seven. Just start out reading a couple scriptures. Just keep your heart focused on him. And when you pray, and maybe you're like me, I'm an ADD prayer, you know, like squirrel, 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 you know, type of thing, you know. I'm like all over the place. And sometimes maybe you're like me as well. It's like me, 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 me. All my prayers are about me. Well, there's this simple little acrostic, and I'll give you this for free this morning. Write the words P-R-A-Y. I know you put your bulletins away. Get them back out. Write the words, the letters P-R-A-Y. I'm going to give you a simple acrostic. The word P, it stands for praise. When you go to God to pray, start out praising him. Thank him for the sunrise, the sunset. Thank him for the sacrifice on the cross, for the sun. Thank him for all the things he's done in your life. Start out praising him, thanking him for what he's done. And then R, you just need to go and you need to repent. Before you go and ask anything, say, God, I'm sorry for what I've been. I'm sorry for what I've done. I'm sorry for this in my life. I'm sorry for saying this or doing this. Repent. And then you get to the A, which is ask. But here's what I've learned. By the time you get to the A, ask, after you've praised him and you've repented, most of the time the things you went there for don't really matter anymore. And then you go and you ask for God. And then why yield? And you say, God, not my will, but your will be done. I mean, that's such a good way to build the gratitude in your heart. Another way you can do gratitude is by singing, worshiping him. I mean, just like the lepers, in a loud voice, just worship him. You know, in a couple of weeks, we have, on September 7th, we have a night of worship as we kick off Grow You. Just an hour, we can all come in this room and just with a loud, collective voice, praise God. Say, God, thank you. Man, I am learning in my worship that it's simply me coming to God. There's no one else in the room. It's me and God. I'm saying, God, I can't do this without you. I need you in my life. I surrender to you. God, would you help me? As I've been reading through the book of Psalms and 1 and 2 Samuel and Chronicles, I continue to read the story of David. I mean, David is a guy who completely gets this whole, you know, gratitude thing. And in fact, there's a time where he is so overwhelmed with gratitude for God that he just runs out of the house praising God, and he forgets he's wearing his tidy whities. And I'm serious. True story. You read it, all right? He's just out there, and his wife's like, what are you doing? He said, you haven't seen nothing yet, you know? But as I read the stories of David, I think about, wow. I mean, his gratitude, you know David's life. I mean, David had a lot of crud in his life. He made a lot of mistakes. He dropped the ball a bunch, and God just picked him up and just brushed him off and gave him a second chance. And David wrote these words in Psalm 30. Listen to what he writes. He writes these words. You turned my wailing into dancing. You removed my sackcloth and clothed me with joy, that my heart may sing to you and not be silent. Oh Lord, my God, I will give you thanks forever. I will give you thanks forever. And I hope that's the way your heart feels. You know, this leper, I like to think that once he went and thanked Jesus, he ran to the priest, and the priest said, good, you're clean, go back to your home. And he ran all the way home, and he burst through the doors, and he saw his wife, and she's like, what are you doing? He goes up, and he gives her a huge hug, and the kids come running in, and he picks him up and raises him over his head. Daddy's home. Daddy's home. And they all sit down, and he tells the story of what happened and how Jesus healed him. then in a quiet moment, he goes into his bedroom and he goes through his Old Testament scrolls and he comes upon Psalms. He comes to Psalm 30 and says, you know what? That's how I feel right now. You turned my wailing into dancing. You took my sackcloth and you made it joy. I can sing of your love forever. I can thank you forever.
I could sing of your love forever. I could sing of your love forever. I could sing of your love forever. I could sing of your love forever. I could sing of your love forever. I could sing of your love forever. I could sing of your love forever. I could sing of your love forever.
I could sing of your love forever. I could thank you forever. You know, the last line of this text that we looked at today can truly be translated, rise and go, you have been saved. You see, 10 lepers went to ask Jesus to be healed. 9 were cleansed. 1 was saved. Church, it is one thing to be physically healed. It is a whole nother thing to be eternally saved.